What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. Ahead of a crucial meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, President Donald Trump stopped short Thursday of condemning Moscow for meddling in the U.S. presidential election and refused to say if he would raise the issue when the leaders go behind closed doors. Yet, in a speech to a friendly crowd of thousands who chanted his name in downtown Warsaw, Trump sought to demonstrate that he wasn't overlooking Russian behavior that has sparked global concern. During a news conference, Trump again questioned the reliability of U.S. intelligence on the election issue and argued that Russia wasn't the only country that might be guilty of interfering. He then flew to Hamburg, Germany, where more than 100,000 protesters flooded the city to stage massive protests against the Group of 20 summit. On the eve of the two-day meeting, German police used water cannons and pepper spray to disperse protesters. Qatar is showing no signs that it is about to bend to the demands of four Arab countries lined up against it. That puts the quartet of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Bahrain, which have accused Doha of a host of transgressions, including backing extremist groups, in a tough spot. By refusing to give in to the Arab states' ultimatum, tiny but wealthy Qatar is calling their bluff and forcing them to prove how much leverage they actually have over their wayward neighbor, which could spur them to impose more punitive sanctions. You're listening to VOA. The president of the UN conference drafting what could be the treaty to ban nuclear weapons says 129 countries have agreed on the text, which is expected to be formally adopted Friday, although all nuclear-armed nations are boycotting the effort. Elaine White Gomez, Costa Rica's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, told reporters Thursday that this will be a historic moment. It will be the first multilateral nuclear disarmament treaty to be concluded in more than 20 years. Last December, UN member states overwhelmingly approved a resolution calling for negotiations on a treaty to outlaw nuclear weapons. President Donald Trump's commission investigating election fraud faced further pushback Thursday in the form of lawsuits seeking to block its collection of detailed information about every voter in the United States. The commission last week asked secretaries of state for voters' names, birth dates, partial Social Security numbers, and other detailed information if it's public under state laws. 14 states and the District of Columbia are refusing to comply, while many others plan to provide the limited information that is public under their laws. Qatar Airways says its passengers can once again carry on laptop computers and other personal electronics for direct flights to the United States. The airline says it has met new U.S. security requirements. In March, the U.S. banned laptops and large electronics from the cabins of direct flights from 10 airports in the Middle East and North Africa over concerns that terrorists could hide bombs inside the devices. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said last week that airlines needed to implement sophisticated imaging technology for X-ray and ultrasound screening of carry-on devices, or continue to ban passengers from bringing the electronics on the plane. Well, there is a happy ending for a team of Gambian students who plan to compete in a major global robotics contest in Washington later this month. The five members were granted visas Thursday to come to the United States after being turned down earlier this week. They say they are still disappointed that their mentor was not granted a visa. Gambia and Afghanistan were the only two countries whose robotic teams were initially denied visas. Neither were given any reason. The group called First Global Challenge holds the yearly robotics competition to build up interest in science, technology, engineering, and math across the world. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Friday, July 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya prepares for the first presidential debate, even after President Kenyatta pulls out.
We made plans for two debates, one on the 10th, that is on Monday, the other on the 24th. And we have one debate for the vice president, that's on the 17th.
Wachira Waruru is chairman of the board of the 2017 Kenyan Presidential Debate Committee. A spate of Al-Shabaab attacks on Kenyan police could be connected to the August election. And one of the crusaders of the so-called Biafra movement of Nigeria explains their purpose.
We need to restore the kingdom of Biafra as we know it far before the coming of the Europeans. We had our values, we had our kingdom, we have our structural government, we have a way of living, and we want to revisit those areas.
Luke Wanunu says he's one of the crusaders for the Biafra movement. Miss Liberia will join us to talk about what she wants to do with her crown. And protesters set the stage for today's G20 summit. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Organizers say Kenya's presidential debate scheduled to begin on Monday will proceed as scheduled despite reports that some of the candidates, including incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta, will not be participating. Local media quoted the ruling Jubilee Coalition Secretary General Raphael Tuju as saying organizers have yet to officially contact the party or the president about the debate. Wachira Waruru is the chairman of the board of the 2017 Kenya Presidential Debate Committee. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the debate committee is awaiting the decision of the court to determine its next line of action.
As you know, we held successful debates in the last elections in 2013, and we are planning to do the same. And we've made plans for two debates, one on the 10th, that is on Monday, and the other on the 24th. And we have one debate for the vice president, and that's on the 17th. So the plans are in place. We have the venue. We have done all the preps. However, there is a little bit of controversy, as always, with the Zakat case that is going to be determined tomorrow. That is Friday. And we've had statements from some of the candidates saying they will not attend the debate. Otherwise, our plan for the debate remains.
I heard from the Jubilee Party, the ruling party, saying that it appears President Uhuru Kenyatta will not participate in the debate. Wouldn't that take a shine out of the essence of the presidential debate if the president or the incumbent decides to pull out?
Definitely, that would be a big problem. However, we are hoping that by the time the day arrives, we'll have been able to communicate and convince the president that he needs to attend the debate.
The general secretary of the party, Raphael Tuju, said that your organization has yet to contact the president or the party, and they are unaware about the ground rules, and that is why it's unlikely that the president will participate.
We are surprised by his remarks because we've been talking to their representatives all along. I think it's a case of breakdown of communication within their own party. But we have been communicating with them. We've even invited them for briefings. We had a briefing last week in which we invited them. They were not able to come, but we've been speaking on the phone. So to say that we've not communicated with them is totally erroneous. We have been talking to them, and we intend to continue talking to them.
So far, how many of the candidates have agreed officially to participate in Monday's presidential debate?
Now, this is the issue. We have 8 presidential candidates confirmed. Now, we came up with ground rules in which we said that the criteria for participation would be for those who achieve more than 5% in opinion polls. Now, 6 of the candidates have protested about that, saying that it's discriminatory. And one of them went to court to try and get the court to compel us to ensure that all 8 candidates participate in the debate. The case was heard on yesterday, and the judge will rule tomorrow, that is Friday, on whether we can use our own criteria or whether we'll be compelled to invite all 8. Now, the 6 who are complaining have very low ratings so far. Most of them are 0.1, less than 0.5%. So they are obviously anticipating that they will not make the cut. The 2 main candidates, President Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, have made it very clear to us that they do not wish to participate in a debate with all eight. Raila Odinga wants to debate with Uhuru Kenyatta, and Uhuru Kenyatta wants to debate with Raila Odinga. Just a two-man debate. That is the information we have.
Will the organization look into organizing for only the two? Because this could potentially exacerbate the case that only the two individuals want to debate in exclusion of the rest who were qualified by the IEBC.
You know, we're actually borrowing from what we consider to be accepted best practice. And one of our best examples is the United States. The United States presidential debates are also determined in the same way by opinion poll. So whereas we had Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in the debate, or other presidential candidates who didn't make the cut, the same principle. But of course, the other candidates have an argument that their constitutional rights are being violated by this criteria. So the court will decide, and we will make a decision based on what the court says. The court will rule on Friday.
Waithira Waruru is the chairman of the board of the 2017 Kenyan Presidential Debate Committee. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. Al-Shabaab militants attacked a police post on Wednesday on Kenya's coast, sparking a day-long gun battle that killed three officers and injured a fourth. According to police officials, Kenya has seen an uptick in attacks over the past 2 months near its border with Somalia. For VOA in Nairobi, Mohammed Yusuf takes a closer look at what may be driving the trend.
Police officials say the gun battle went on for 10 hours after armed men raided a police post in Lamu County Wednesday. The VOA Somali service reports that Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack. Since May, Al-Shabaab has carried out a series of deadly attacks in Kenya's northeast and coast regions, which border Somalia. The targets have been security forces. However, a roadside bomb against police vehicle last week in Lamu County also killed four school children. Interior Ministry spokesperson Wendan Joka says the porous border complicates the situation.
We saw many other activities going on the side of Garissa, and I mean, some of these guys moving back to Somali. But since the time of Ramadan is when we started having the IEDs and all that. So this the latest incident does not necessarily mean that our agency, the agency forces that are there, have been ineffective there. But occasionally you expect some of these insurgents to make an entry and they cause losses on our side.
He says security forces are enhancing patrols, which may include patrols by air. Some analysts see a link between the fresh spate of attacks and nationwide elections coming August 8th.
They know that everybody is so much focused into politics at the expense of security.
Kenyan security expert Richard Tuta says he fears Al-Shabaab may have been able to establish roots in the Boni Forest, despite Kenyan military operations that began nearly 2 years ago to flush them out. The forest stretches from Lamu County into Somalia.
Kenya as a country will start experiencing terrorism being exported, not now from Somalia, but from Boni Forest itself, because it is also acting also as a very good training ground for the jihadists.
The duration of the gun battle Wednesday, as well as the reported number of attackers, as many as 200 fighters according to some Kenyan media, have raised concern. Police have not confirmed the number of assailants. George Musamali is director of the Center for Risk Management in Africa.
From Kiunga, you get into Ras Kambon. We have a whole brigade of the KDF plus the Somali National Army. So it's become very difficult for people to traverse this country and then cross the border, get into Kenya to carry out this attack. So it means basically that these Al-Shabaab guys are actually based in Boni Forest itself. They are not coming from across the border.
However, the Interior Ministry spokesperson told VOA Al-Shabaab does not have long-term bases in the Boni Forest. He said the militants come and go. Kenya sent its troops to Somalia more than 5 years ago as part of an African Union force to defeat Al-Shabaab. The Al-Qaeda link group responded by ramping up attacks on Kenyan soil. The most recent large-scale attack in Kenya was over 2 years ago on Garissa University in the northeast. 150 people were killed, most of them students. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A member of the indigenous people of Biafra, the group that is seeking autonomy for the region located in eastern Nigeria, says the purpose of the movement is not secession, but to restore the freedom and the way of life of the region before the coming of Europeans in 1829. Luke Wanunu says he's one of the crusaders for Biafra.
We need to restore the Kingdom of Biafra as we know it far before the coming of the Europeans. I refer you to the map of 1829, which you go to U.S. Brenner, you're going to find the map of Biafra and the kingdom, nine kingdoms that made up the Biafra before the demarcation of the area.
I'm assuming you believe in the idea of secession, therefore.
No, I don't use that word. There is nothing like secession. The people have been not autonomous. Even when the British came, they recognized the independence of the people and they gave them separate sovereignty. So when you guys use this word secession, what are you seceding from?
Some leaders from the southeastern region of the country have told the Biafran people to reject the idea you are pushing.
In the Biafra and Igbo land, the people are supreme. We call it Ohaka. You let the people decide. Those people are not leaders. The leaders are the people who always lead the people where they want to go. You see, when you use the word political, it's a foreign language. We want the people to decide where they want to go. You just help them to get there.
The former president of Nigeria, Olusegun Obasanjo, also believes that this Biafra movement would not succeed and it should be dropped.
Obasanjo, you know how he got to where he is. It's because when the nation has nowhere to go, fools become president and the ideology. Obasanjo is a dictator by every means you can call him. He's an opportunist just because he danced to the whims of the northern, and then they promoted him there. Now he has to sing to their tune. How would you like to destroy the house that allow you to enrich yourself over other people? You're not going to speak for it to dismantle. The so-called harvested leaders cannot tell us where to go. Let the people decide.
To what degree does this movement you are involved with have to do with the redistribution of resources in Nigeria? As I was telling you earlier, there's a group called the Eastern Consultative Assembly. They have made the restructuring of Nigeria a major condition for the coming elections in 2019, saying that any candidate who does not support restructuring of Nigeria, people in the eastern region should not vote for that person.
One thing about the world is when you hear from the traumatized citizens of this so-called Biafra, they will tell you structuring is a colonial master's ideology. We don't know what that means. The world has been created by our God, every man to his own tent. Who are you restructuring? Is a human being you restructuring? Give them safety and their freedom to determine who they are. People progress according to their will and their cultural values. I believe that this idea of restructuring is a political language. I don't know who is talking about restructuring. 87-year-old man, or you're going to listen to the future generation that said, we are now exposed to our history. Nobody told us that Nigeria was a fraud.
Luke Wanunu says he's one of the crusaders for Biafra. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Chicago. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf this month challenged women worldwide to pursue their dreams despite the many challenges they may encounter in their lives. The president spoke in Dallas, Texas. Woki Dolo is Miss Liberia 2017. She explains to me what she wants to do with her crown.
One of my biggest projects is to have an office space for Miss Liberia.
An office space?
Yes.
So are you saying right now there's no office space?
There's an office under the Ministry of Information, Culture and Tourism. But I'm trying to have Miss Liberia office outside the ministry, that once you come to Miss Liberia, you have a meeting, you go straightly to the office of Miss Liberia, that you don't have to pass through the minister or another third party, but whosoever you're talking, you are talking to that person in the vicinity of the Miss Liberia office.
So what do you think you need to do to get that office established?
Oh, I need resources. And that's the first and foremost thing that I need.
So you'll be raising money?
Yeah, a fundraising event.
When President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf came to power in 2005, there was a lot of hope for women all around the world, Africa and the rest of the world, that perhaps this will bring about women empowerment.
Okay.
How would you describe the state of Liberian women now?
Oh, they are empowered. I mean, she made it to her promise, because when you look at the House of Representatives, when you look at the whole system in Liberia, it's like a balanced system. You have 50% men and you have 50% women.
You mean in the House of Representatives?
No, not in the House of Representatives, but the lifestyle in Liberia when it comes to women participation in leadership and men participation in leadership. Mm-hmm. They both have the same quantity and quality.
Yet so, there are some people who say that what it is right now is not enough, that we need more women.
Yeah, we need more women, but during the past, it wasn't like that. So I think we should appreciate this current moment that we have women who are serving in that capacity. When Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf took the lead, other women followed. When you look at the foreign ministry, it's led by a woman. When you look at Ministry of Gender, it's led by a woman. When you look at the GSA, it's led by a woman.
So there is some progress, but the glass is half full.
Yeah. You know, I'm not looking at the glass to be empty, because it's half full. So you just need to invest more and then it will be fully full.
You know, I keep hearing about violence against women in Liberia.
Yeah.
For example, rape. Some people say that some big people in government demean young women. Do you hear that? And what's your view?
People encounter certain people. But to be honest, I haven't encountered that. It's a natural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Not just Liberia, but you experience that in other areas. The rape issue, I mean, it's a natural phenomenon. When I went to Uganda, I had a very tedious situation where a 14-year-old girl was sexually abused by her father and sexually abused by her grandfather, and she got pregnant for her grandfather at the age of 14 and got a baby right now.
What are your personal goals or aspirations? Where would Miss Woki Dolo be after the crown?
I first want to proceed with my education, because I obtained a Bachelor of Arts degree in Peace and Conflict Resolution from Cuttington University in 2015. And as my term is over in December, I want to start my life to enroll and get my master's. And after my master, to see how best I can put myself into that social entrepreneurial life, because I want to establish my own business. I want to see how best I can promote other young people to tell them the way forward.
Miss Liberia, Woki Dolo. So yes. Nice to have you here at Voice of America.
Thanks, Mr. Boti. Thank you.
Woki Dolo is Miss Liberia 2017. She spoke with me in our Washington studio. U.S. President Donald Trump is now in the German port city of Hamburg for the start of the G20 summit of the world's leading economies. After a successful visit to Poland, the U.S. leader faces a difficult scenario at the G20 that includes meetings with leaders of China, Germany, and Russia, and a long list of contentious issues. VOA's Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports from Hamburg.
The scene in Hamburg was far different from the rousing welcome President Trump had received in Poland. Police using water cannons and baton moved in on thousands of leftist demonstrators intent on disrupting the G20 summit. Protesters had been camping out for days, waiting for the U.S. leader.
What are my thoughts about it? Donald Trump is kind of really symbolic for this issue about how to manage crises, how to manage the crisis in the world. And he is kind of the symbol for our enemies.
Hamburg has historically been a center of left-wing anti-capitalist protests, a symbol of openness that German Chancellor Angela Merkel wants to showcase as she makes her case against protectionism.
I think we're united in our will to strengthen multilateral relations at the G20 summit, that we need an open society, especially open trade flows.
Hours before Mr. Trump's arrival here, Germany's foreign minister voiced concerns that Trump's complaints about a bloated German trade surplus could lead to a trade war with the U.S. Hamburg also gives Trump a chance to voice his concerns on the explosive issues of North Korea and Chinese steel dumping with China's President Xi Jinping. Along with heads of the world's leading economies, thousands of anti-capitalist demonstrators have converged on the city. German police had been bracing for violence and confiscated hundreds of homemade weapons, including flamethrowers and clubs. With all the discord going into the summit, the tough issues, and the list of strong characters taking part, the stage is set for high drama. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Hamburg.
time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin with the stadium stampede in Malawi, where 8 people, including 7 children, died ahead of a football match at the Lilongwe's Bingu National Stadium. The stampede reportedly happened as thousands of people tried to find seats ahead of a friendly between top sides Nyasa Big Bullets and Silver Strikers. Nicholas Dausi is Malawi's Minister of Information. He spoke with my colleague, James Botti.
It has been a very sad occasion. Indeed, we have lost 8 people because of the stampede that happened when people were scrambling to enter to the stadium. And I think this is a sad moment, and we wish those that have passed on to have their spirits in peace. But may the good Lord bless those that are injured. So it's really a sad moment. These games were being played to commemorate our 53 years of independence, so it was a commemoration ceremony.
Super Eagles of Nigeria and England-based goalkeeper Carl Ikeme is to begin chemotherapy after being diagnosed with acute leukemia. The 31-year-old player of Championship side Wolves was said to have returned abnormal blood tests during pre-season testing, and further checks were also said to have confirmed the diagnosis. The goalkeeper has been with Wolves for his entire career, making more than 200 appearances for the club. Football clubs in England, as well as players and teammates of Ikeme, past and present, have been offering their support to the goalkeeper on social media. And on to the latest FIFA ranking release for the month of June, as Egypt loses 4 spots to drop from number 20 to number 24 in the FIFA Global Football Rankings. Egypt, ranked as the best footballing nation on the continent, is 3 places ahead of Senegal, who sits at number 27 in the world ranking, followed by Democratic Republic of Congo at number 28, Tunisia at number 34, and Cameroon at number 36. And now to the CAF Champions League and Confederations Cup matches scheduled for this weekend. Ethiopian side St. George are on the road, hoping to win as they travel to Tunisia for a Group C assignment against Tunisian side Esperance. In Group A, leaders Etoile du Sahel will want to claim the full 3 points when they host El Merrikh of Omdurman to consolidate a spot in the knockout stages, while Al Hilal of Omdurman will target a win to redeem their pride when they take on Favourite Biera. In the Confederations Cup, Club African and KCCA of Uganda will battle for top spot in Group A when they meet at the Olympic Stadium in Raids on Friday night. Elsewhere, FCUS Rabat and Rivers United will meet in the final round of Group A matches for Stade du FUS on Friday night. TP Mazembe and Horoya SC will battle for top spot in Group D when they meet in Lubumbashi on Saturday afternoon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. That's it for this Friday, July 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.